Scenes of bloodshed and fighting in the streets and buildings going up in flames filled the view screens, interrupted occasionally by news reporters and commentators. Their faces were flushed and they talked too quickly. There'd never been a story like this, and with so much going on, most of it coming in live, there was little or no censorship anymore. Almost delirious with the truth, news editors threw caution to the winds and put everything on the air, irrespective of what it was or where it came from. Commentators were saying what they really meant for the first time in their lives and couldn't seem to get enough of it. Neither could the audience, according to the latest viewing figures. Lionstone shut these channels down, but found it harder and harder to find broadcasts telling her what she wanted to hear. Eventually, she shut them all down and screamed into her comm implant for General Shaw Beckett. His face appeared on a screen floating before her. He looked tired. The top buttons of his uniform were undone.
What do you want, Lionstone? I'm busy.
Don't you dare talk to us that way, Beckett! This is your Empress! We have new orders for you, effective immediately. Identify all planets where rebel forces have taken control and scorch them one after the other. You are not empowered to accept surrenders. We want those planets dead and lifeless.
Beckett stared impassively at her out of the screen.
And the billions of innocents who would die?
Expendable. They should have fought harder against the rebels. Confirm our order, General.
I regret I am unable to do so, Your Majesty, much as it pains me. What remains of the fleet is under constant Haydenman attack. Many of my ships have been destroyed or boarded. Those I have left are scattered too widely to be recalled. We don't have enough ships in any one place to attempt even a single scorching. We're having to fight with everything we've got just to survive, Empress. I would estimate that more than 40% of your fleet has been destroyed, or is in enemy hands.
Lionstone lost it completely, and shouted and screamed abuse at Beckett's unmoved image. She threatened him with everything from demotion to immediate arrest and execution if he wouldn't carry out her orders, and still he wouldn't answer her. Lionstone finally regained some self-control and stood panting before the viewscreen, her hands clenched into fists. Beckett waited patiently while she got her breath back. Lionstone fixed him with a cold glare.
Very well. Again, we are failed by those we are forced to trust. New orders, General. All Star Cruisers are to return immediately to protect the homeworld. No excuses, no exceptions. We require a shield of ships around Golgotha. No one is to pass. Whatever happens, the homeworld must not fall. Is that clear, General?
Lionstone, it's over. We're too far away. Even if we were to abandon the people we're protecting from the Haydenmen, by the time we'd fought our way past their ships, it would be all over on Golgotha, bar the shouting. All I can offer you are my best wishes and my hopes for your personal safety. There's nothing I can do for you anymore. Goodbye, Lionstone.
Oh! Traitor!
Beckett's face disappeared from the view screen. Lionstone breathed heavily, her eyes wide and staring at some private inner image, and then she moved quickly among the floating screens, calling up captains in her fleet personally. Many didn't answer for one reason or another, and those who did couldn't help her. They had their own problems. She saved the E-class ships, her pride and joy, for last, but only one answered, the Endurance. The bridge was in flames. Emergency sirens and warnings were sounding everywhere, overlapping each other. Crew members sat doggedly at their seats, manning the surviving stations with desperate concentration. Orders and responses could barely be heard over the bedlam, but the screams were clear enough. Dead bodies littered the bridge, some charred and blackened figures still sitting at their exploded stations. Smoke was building faster than the extractor fans could clear it. Wounded were sobbing and crying out, but no one had the time to tend to them. Lionstone yelled for someone to report to her, and finally a disheveled minor officer lurched to a halt before the viewscreen. One of his sleeves was blackened and crisped from flames only recently beaten out, and the hair on one side of his head had been burned away. Half his face was roasted an angry red. He pulled himself to something like attention and saluted the screen. His eyes were wild and staring, like some creature confronted by a forest fire. Lionstone glared at him.
Who are you? Where's the captain? What's happening on the Endurance?
Navigation officer Robert Campbell reporting, Your Majesty. The captain's dead. We're under attack by 3 Haydenman ships. We're faster than they are, but they've got weapons and shields. Our shields are failing. We've seriously disabled one of the Haydenman ships, but doing so drained our reserves almost to zero. Power levels all over the ship are dropping fast. But we won't give up, Your Majesty. We'll fight till they tear this ship apart. If nothing else, we'll buy you time.
A massive explosion rocked the bridge. The hull had been breached. Air and smoke shrieked out the widening hole. People not strapped into seats clung to their workstations to avoid being dragged away. The lights flickered and went out, replaced by the dull red glow of emergency lighting. There was only one siren sounding now, loud and piercing, like a lost soul falling into eternal darkness. Robert Campbell clung to the edge of the screen and tried to shout something, but he couldn't get enough air into his lungs. He pulled himself away from the screen, heading across the devastated bridge toward the emergency exit. All around him, the workstations were exploding one by one, throwing their dead operators away or blowing them apart where they sat. And then the screen went suddenly blank, and the court was quiet again. Lionstone stared at the screen for a long moment.
Brave boy. Maybe I should have put him in charge. And the Endurance is gone. The finest of the E-class ships. The ship that was supposed to be unbeatable.
To be fair, I don't think the designers had Haydenman ships in mind when they said that. And it did take 3 of the legendary golden ships to take down 1 E-class ship.
The ship didn't fail me. It was the crew. Cowards and traitors and incompetents. Is there no one I can trust?
Razor and Kadath shared a glance, but said nothing. Up on the surface of Golgotha, in the teeming streets of the Parade of the Endless, the fighting raged. The Imperial forces hadn't given up yet. The Grundles were all dead, but there were still other secret, unpleasant weapons they hadn't used yet. They brought out the experimental living S-blockers, captured Espers brainwashed and conditioned into obedient shells. The rebel Espers had no choice but to fall back and make way for the standard fighters. The rebel advance slowed to a crawl in those areas, giving the Empire forces time to regroup. So the underground brought forward its own awful weapons. Poulter sent razor-edged Psystorms barreling down the streets, ripping apart all they touched. Soldiers spontaneously combusted, burning with a fire no water could extinguish as pyros went to work. And then there were the mind bombs, simple devices built around Esper brain tissues. When activated, they spread madness and horror through all non-Espers in the vicinity. Affected troops clawed their own eyes out, or turned on each other, and tore their companions limb from limb. The rebels pressed forward, overrunning Imperial positions again and again. And then Valentine's war machines appeared on the scene, and everything changed. Huge hulking constructions stamped and rumbled down the wider streets, built in disruptors cutting through the packed rebel ranks. The Espers massed themselves before the oncoming machines and prayed for miracles. And they got one. The Mater Mundi, our mother of all souls, once again manifested through the entire Esper force, burning brightly in every man and woman. For a moment, they shone like gods, lighting the streets around them. And then their minds came together in a single expression of will, and an unstoppable Psystorm raged through the streets, tearing the war machines apart and scattering the pieces. Metal shrapnel rained down on the retreating Imperial forces until they too were swept away by the advancing Psystorm. Every Esper in the city roared with triumph, and the Parade of the Endless shook with the sound of it. In his fortified retreat in Tower Wolf, Valentine was thrown rudely from his psychic connection with his war machines and sat trembling and panting in his control center. One by one, the systems around him were shutting down, wrecked beyond repair. Valentine himself was dazed and disoriented, but lucky to be alive, and he knew it. The Esper attack had followed him home and would have destroyed anything less than his chemically augmented and expanded mind. He could still feel the fringes of the Esper construct searching for him, as yet unable to get a grip on his slippery, evasive mind. He would have to leave Tower Wolf and seek sanctuary elsewhere. But concentrate as he might, he couldn't think of anywhere else that would welcome him. Even Limestone wouldn't want him after he'd failed to bring her victory with his war machines. Valentine Wolf sat alone in the heart of his family tower and wondered what to do next. The maintenance tunnels for the palace's underground train systems had been sealed off and abandoned centuries ago. Through the dark, claustrophobic passageways came Owen and Hazel and Giles, stumbling along the uneven floor and keeping their heads down to avoid banging them on the low ceiling. Even their incredible eyesight was useless in the utter darkness. Owen and Giles both carried lamps, their stark white light gleaming unpleasantly on the curving tunnel walls. Hazel had the map Owen had drawn out of computer records, almost as old as the tunnels themselves. Owen still wasn't sure exactly what he was going to do when he finally forced his way into the Imperial Court and faced his Empress on the Iron Throne. He tried to visualize the kind of empire he might be responsible for creating, and wasn't surprised to find he couldn't. All he'd ever known personally was the Empire of the Families and the Iron Throne. All his life he'd been raised to revere and honor the throne, irrespective of whoever occupied it, sworn to serve it all his life and to his death if necessary. The Iron Throne was the source of all duty and honor, and other things that could not easily be put into words. Overturning the throne was like overturning God. Owen Deathstalker was an aristocrat, even if he had been outlawed, and he supposed in some ways he always would be. But he'd seen too much of the dark side of empire, of the suffering and horrors on which his society of wealth and privilege was based, and he couldn't just look away and pretend he never had. Duty and honor and sheer humanity demanded he put a stop to it. So he became a leader of the rebellion, a hero and an inspiration to others, and his life had been given over to avenging others whose lives had been broken and discarded. The tunnel they were following finally reached an end in a sealed hatchway. Owen and Giles put their shoulders and their maze-given strength to it, and the heavy steel plate wrenched open on squealing hinges. Light spilled into the tunnel. The station was a massive, wide-open cavern, all gleaming tiles and overhead lights, with a single tube train standing at the spotlessly clean platform. The long vehicle was large enough to make them feel like children in its presence, all gleaming steel, polished within an inch of its life. There were no windows, but a sliding door stood invitingly open. The platform was deserted, no guards anywhere, though security cameras watched openly from above. "Come, my Lady Hazel, your carriage awaits." Owen motioned for Hazel to enter. Hazel stepped warily through the open door into the train's carriage.
"I am nobody's lady."
"Who am I to argue?" Once inside, Giles sat down on the nearest seat and put his feet up. Hazel headed straight for the built-in bar, and Owen paid careful attention to the code panel set beside the door. The correct codes announced who you were, how many were in your party, and your level in society. Without the right codes, the train wouldn't go anywhere. A really wrong code would activate the security systems, and the gas jets fitted in the carriage, and the only place you'd go after that would be the morgue. Oz claimed to have codes that would not only get them to the next station in perfect safety, but would also override the security systems so that the gas jets couldn't be activated from the outside. Owen wasn't quite as convinced of that as he had been.
"Trust me, your father's research was very thorough. The codes are correct. Just punch in the numbers as I give them to you."
Owen growled something indistinct under his breath and did as he was told. The last number went in, and Owen braced himself for any hissing from the gas jets. He had already decided that at the first whiff of anything suspicious, he was grabbing Hazel and leaving this carriage, even if he had to punch a hole through the solid steel wall to do it. But nothing happened, or at least nothing unpleasant. The door slid shut, the engine fired up in its sealed compartment, and the train moved smoothly off. Owen looked around him, feeling there was something else he ought to be doing, and then shrugged and went to sit down beside Giles, who was leaning back in his luxuriously appointed seat, eyes closed, feet casually crossed before him, the epitome of relaxation. Owen sat on the edge of his seat and bit his lower lip. Trains gave him travel sickness. Hazel had the bar open and was working her way through the decanters.
You know, this has almost been too easy.
She lowered a decanter and wiped her mouth with the back of her hand. Limestone is always believed simple is best. It doesn't take much to make these trains secure. Once they've started, there's no way of getting off. The carriage is sealed, and the gas jets in the ceiling can be activated by the palace at the first sign of anything worrying. A slow and rather horrid death, or so I'm told. Hazel glared at the nearest gas nozzle.
Hold everything. Are you telling me you don't know exactly what these codes do?
I'm afraid so. Oz doesn't have details like that. Apparently my father loaded the codes into the AI's memory some time back, but never got around to explaining their function. Which was typical of my father, who never explained anything unless he absolutely had to. So I'm afraid we'll just have to trust him.
You want me to trust the word of an AI that's supposed to be dead and only you can hear, programmed by a man who delighted in intrigue and treachery? All right, stop the train, let me off, I'll walk the rest of the way.
The trains are programmed not to stop anywhere except their destination. I could break down the door and throw you out, but then you'd be facing a 10-mile walk, alone, in the dark, facing unknown security measures very definitely not covered by my codes. Hazel scowled at him and took solace in her decanter.
I hate it when you're right. You go all smug and self-satisfied.
The journey passed uneventfully. Hazel kept shooting suspicious glances at the gas jets in the ceiling, but she still didn't speak for the rest of the trip. The train finally slowed and slid to a halt. The door opened, and the engine shut itself down. It was suddenly very quiet. Owen got to his feet, his heart thudding uncomfortably in his chest. He drew his sword and gun, took a deep breath, and stepped out onto the platform. He only managed a couple of steps, and then stopped dead. He heard Hazel and Giles leave the carriage behind him, but he only had eyes for the man waiting at the other end of the platform to meet them. As soon as Owen saw him, he realized he should have expected him to be there. That it was right that this man, above all others, should be there to try and stop them going any farther. He was standing some distance down the brightly illuminated platform, sword in hand, waiting patiently for them to come to him. His energy half spit and crackled loudly in the quiet. Half a man. Hazel moved up beside Owen and swore quietly.
I knew things had been going too smoothly. Why did it have to be him, of all people? The one man in the Empire who definitely can't be killed.
Because my loyalty is beyond question. Because the sensors in the carriage told us who was coming. And Lionstone knew someone of more than usual valor would be needed to stop you. And because I wanted to be here. Lionstone was quite annoyed when the gas jets wouldn't function, but I wasn't. That would have been such a petty way to win. This way is better. It's only fitting that the truest man in the Empire should face such infamous traitors to the crown. I suppose it's too late even now to talk you out of this madness.
Yes, it is. Our oath was to the throne, not to the madwoman who currently sits on it.
A distinction without meaning.
Half a man moved unhurriedly toward them, the sound of his one human foot slapping on the platform, sounding loud and distinct in the hush. It felt to Owen as though the whole Empire was listening and holding its breath to see what would happen next.
We have nothing to talk about, outlaws. We don't even speak the same language anymore.
I don't think we ever did. Throw down your sword. You don't stand a chance against the three of us.
You can't kill me. No one can.
You never met us before. We're different.
So we've heard.
Half a man stopped a few yards short of them, and his half-mouth moved in something that might have been a smile.
Know what this is?
And he held up in his human hand a small metal box with a red button on it. Owen, Hazel, and Giles just had time to recognize it as a mind bomb, and then half a man pressed the button. The tech in the box stimulated the Esper brain tissues, and a psionic signal leaped out, falling across the three rebels like a thunderstorm in their heads. Owen, Hazel, and Giles rocked on their feet, hands pressed to their heads, trying to force the hideous howl out of their thoughts. Owen staggered back a step, his eyes bulging, his thoughts slow and churning, and not entirely his own. Bright lights flared around him, and there were mad voices in his ears. There was something walking up and down in his head, and it wasn't he. Pain and weakness chewed through his body, but even through all that was happening to him, Owen could still hear half a man talking.
Interesting. We weren't sure what effect the mind bomb would have on you, since we were fairly sure that whatever you aren't actually Espers. But the odds seemed good that it would mess you up nicely. My own unique nature makes me immune, of course. There's really no point in struggling. This particular mind bomb has been augmented far beyond its usual strength and range, just for you. If you were normal mortals, your brains would be leaking into your ears by now. But don't worry. Just hold still for a moment, and I'll put you out of your misery.
Owen had dropped his gun. His hands felt like they belonged to someone else. He only knew he still had hold of his sword, because when he looked down, he could see it in his white-knuckled grip. Giles was on his knees beside him, twitching and trembling as his nerves fired at random, his eyes wide and unseeing. Hazel lay on her back on the platform, her mouth stretched in a feral grimace of helpless pain and rage, her empty hands clenching and unclenching. They were fighting the mind bomb's influence and getting nowhere. So Owen decided to stop fighting. He withdrew deep inside himself and shut down all his maze-given gifts. They were no use to him now. They had become the means whereby the mind bomb was able to torment him. It was hard, deliberately blinding and deafening himself as half a man advanced on him with deadly intent. But somehow he knew his only real defense lay inside him, not outside. The mind bomb was designed to work on humans, but though he wasn't an Esper, he wasn't human anymore either. And if his thoughts were still human, it was only because he chose so. There were other ways of thinking. And even as that idea came to him, he seemed to see another direction he could move in, another form of thought, above and beyond human limitations. So he went that way, in a direction that was more than a direction, and suddenly his mind was clear again. He opened his eyes to find half a man looming over him, sword in hand, mind bomb hanging from his belt. And all Owen had to do was lash out with his sword and cut through the cord holding the mind bomb to the belt. The small steel box fell clattering to the platform, and Owen crushed it with one blow of his golden fist. In a moment, the mind bomb's influence was gone, and Owen was himself again. Hazel and Giles came back to themselves and scrambled to their feet, shaking their heads confusedly. And that part of Owen's mind that had come briefly alive when he needed it shut itself down again, now that it was no longer needed.
I'm impressed, Deathstalker, but not really surprised. They told me their new and improved mind bomb would fry your minds, but I was never convinced. Not after all the things you've done. You're becoming a legend, just like me. You won't like it. People will make up stories and songs about you, and worship your image on the view screen. But they'll never get near the real truth of who you are. They'll make a giant out of you, and then be ever so upset when you let them down by being only human. Still, not to worry. I'll see your story ends here. Then you'll never have to hear the lies they'll tell in your name.
Shut up and fight. They came together, and their swords clashed and flew apart in a shower of sparks. Half a man moved and struck with several lifetimes' speed and experience, never still, endlessly circling around his opponent, pressing Owen's skills to the limit. Owen moved with him, limiting himself to purely defensive moves as he studied his opponent's style, moving round and round in slow, cautious circles, searching out half a man's weaknesses and vulnerabilities. It didn't take Owen long to realize that half a man didn't have any. The energy half supplied him with endless strength and speed, so he never grew tired, and he knew more about swordsmanship than Owen ever would. Owen boosted, becoming immediately faster and stronger, and launched his own attack. Half a man sped right up with him and calmly stood up everything Owen could throw at him. Strength burned in Owen's arms, and he sped up again, pushing his boost to the limits. His sword moved so fast it was only a blur, and for the first time, half a man fell back a step. Owen pressed the attack, cutting at half a man's defending sword like a woodsman attacking a stubborn tree. In that moment, half a man represented to him everything he hated about the Empire, and he laughed aloud as he threw himself at his enemy. Half a man had stopped smiling, but held his ground and would not retreat another step. And it occurred to Owen that whereas half a man's great strength and speed came from the endless store of his energy half, Owen's boost was of strictly limited duration, which meant, if he didn't find a way to finish this fight soon, the odds were he wouldn't be finishing it at all. So he put all his strength and speed into one attack, a hammering blow with all his maze-given talents behind it that slammed right past half a man's defense and crashed down on his human skull. For a long moment, Owen's sword seemed to hesitate, as though frustrated by some unseen energy barrier. And then, all the maze's gifts and strengths concentrated themselves in Owen's blow, a more than human impetus that would not be denied, and the sword crashed on. The great and heavy blade cut down through half a man's human face, right next to the energy's dividing line, and then carried on down, cutting the human half away from the energy until the crimson blade erupted from the groin in a rush of blood and guts. Owen staggered backwards as his sword came free, all his strength and speed disappearing as he dropped out of boost. Hazel and Giles caught him and kept him from falling. And together they watched as half a man's human half fell to lie thrashing and bleeding to death on the platform. The energy half still stood where it was, motionless.
How the hell did you do that?
Damned if I know. They all moved forward to stand over the twitching human half, giving the energy half a wide berth.